Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
There's this very persistent myth that northern cities never had formal segregation.
The South had Jim Crow. Look at those signs. Well, racial covenants did the work of Jim Crow all over the North.
The law of the streets, the law of the courts working in consort to discourage blacks from moving into white neighborhoods.
We're talking more than bricks and mortars and windows. We are talking about people's lives, their values, and their humanity.
The special is called Jim Crow of the North. It premieres on TPT Channel 2, Monday, February 25th at 9 p.m., 9 p.m. Central. Excellent. Very excited to have Daniel Bergen in studio. He is the producer of Jim Crow of the North, and we were chatting right away in the hallway that we had. I certainly had heard about these with Jewish people being redlined in North Minneapolis and then eventually being allowed to move out and join country clubs and go to hospitals. And just so overt with the racial overtones. And I'm so glad to have you in studio to talk about it.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're having me. And it's a really important story that we want people to know about.
So tell us what these covenants were. Explain it to people, because there are people who have no idea this ever went on.
Well, and Jordana, that's a big part of why we think this is so important, is I think the knowledge and awareness of this is really low. You knew it because of family connections, mm-hmm. but it hasn't been told in our history as broadly. So beginning in the early part of this century, real estate developers started to use restrictive covenants and embed those into real estate development, home development. And this was basically excluding certain people, a range of people, but almost always African Americans, from buying, occupying, leasing, in any way being in those homes.
And but so, legally, or just, it's my house, somebody made me a better offer, with air quotes. I mean, legally, they weren't allowed to sell to black people?
These were enforceable contracts. And the title, as you pointed out, is dramatic, Jim Crow of the North. But as the researchers behind this this project and the research say, you know, in a way, this is more insidious than Jim Crow in the South, because it isn't just a sign over a drinking fountain. This is embedded in contracts and then enforced by law and to some degree supported over the decades by court decisions.
Okay. How did it kind of shape the black community and other communities surrounding it and North Minneapolis? And then, of course, the follow up is, how did it get changed?
Yeah. So over the decades, starting with the covenants, you started to see it spread. And remember, this is early enough where a lot of Minneapolis isn't developed yet. So then it became commonplace when a lot was developed, say, further south in Minneapolis near Lake Nokomis. These were often injected into those. So southwest, south, some of northeast, you kind of start to create this outline and this shape that then a few decades later, when the federal government starts to require that red lines are used to kind of determine where they will invest, really green lines where they will invest, mm-hmm. but that creates red lines where they won't, where banks won't support mortgages. That starts to build on what started with the covenants, creating these areas that now we see some of the worst disparities in America.
So what did the community look like back then? How were they growing? And how many black folks were in Minneapolis at the turn of the century?
It's an important question, because it wasn't a large number in Minneapolis or St. Paul, but there were growing communities. What's interesting is Minneapolis was initially integrated. It wasn't segregated in that formal sense. So, you know, from post-Civil War through the turn of the century, you had emerging communities here and there that were very mixed. In fact, Rondo and St. Paul was actually a mixed neighborhood. People don't know that. But then as these policies started to set in, you saw these lines being drawn, and that are later, and unfortunately sometimes enforced by a few instances of mob threats and violence.
How did it get changed?
Well, there were a series of court decisions over the decades. And, you know, the NAACP were fighting this from the beginning. There were a lot of allies fighting it. You can imagine in a city like Minneapolis that has, you know, Hubert Humphrey and real kind of relative progressive policies, there was work at these. But they were so entrenched, and still are, in terms of how they've affected community. It took, you know, generations. And in the Fair Housing Act of the of 1967, 68, really, that's when it was really finally kind of rooted out legally. Mm-hmm. And so you now, of course, have a lot of structures and enforcement that prevent things like redlining. But unfortunately, as we see, a lot of the impact is still with us in terms of the legacy of the lack of investment, the lack of wealth development. And that's part of why we wanted to tell this story, is it kind of helps us answer how we got to now with some of the challenges we see in the Twin Cities today.
And I think that's an interesting, conclusion, how we got to now. Because we do have neighborhoods that are historically Black. We have neighborhoods where, you cross the street and it looks like a different neighborhood.
Right.
So these are direct, consequences of these kind of laws.
Exactly. And some of these neighborhoods are awesome neighborhoods and they've created amazing mm-hmm. people and leaders. And it's important for me in the storytelling in the film to acknowledge that these neighborhoods persisted and were resilient. But boy, there was a lot that they had to kind of push back on. But it's also important to note that the Green Line neighborhoods that had kind of consecutive generations of wealth development, mm-hmm. home ownership, municipal support, investment, trees, schools, parks, that's why we see the disparities that we do mm-hmm. in Minnesota today.
So tell us who's in the documentary. What local voices can we hear?
Yeah, well, it's really important to point out that this all came about because of this amazing research team, the Mapping Prejudice Project. They're at the University of Minnesota and the Anderson Libraries, and they are really amazing scholars who really want people to understand the impact of history and policy and planning. So it's a complicated history, as you know, they've helped kind of surface and identify and then literally start to create this map. And that's kind of the touchstone for our storytelling mm-hmm. as well. We'll learn a little bit about the folks who stood up and resisted this, going back to historic lawyers like Lena Smith of Minneapolis, the first African-American female lawyer in the state. We have a cameo of Josie Johnson, a freedom fighter and civil rights pioneer who's still with us and who was involved in doing a lot of bipartisan work on fair housing in the early 60s. And so it was important. I'm glad you asked. It was important for me to weave in mm-hmm. the voices of the people, the humanity, despite the kind of oppressive policies. And I wanted to have those voices there.
Would you say that we have such a disparity in Minnesota between Black communities and their schools and grades and how well they do in school? Is this a direct result of some of these? You talked about the money not going into the red line districts, that their schools aren't built up. But we know it. And people aren't in the studio with me. you're nodding along with me. Daniel's going, yes, yes. So he's answering my question as I'm asking it. But you said this stopped in during the civil rights movement, 68, 70. It's been a while since then. Why are we still so lacking and not fixing this problem?
Well, part of it is economics. And you just think about if you weren't able to maybe own your home at a point, or at least not in a decent neighborhood. But remember, you couldn't even get loans backed by the federal government and mm-hmm. In banks and insurance in some of these redlined areas. So imagine, that's your grandparents and they weren't able to kind of invest and they were renters, or if they were owners, it was in a property that's losing value. Two generations later, it's kind of hard to build on that wealth. Maybe you didn't get help getting to college. Mm-hmm. And so you might see now some of the disparities we see today. And the converse of that is if you're in a green-lined neighborhood, you've got this kind of wealth development and these opportunities and access that again show up today. And, freeways didn't help. 35W kind of tore through the historic Black community in South Minneapolis, just like 94 did in Rondo and St. Paul. And so there was a loss of home ownership, a loss of community. You lose something like Central High School in South Minneapolis, again, as a result of kind of just the erosion of this historic community that was redlined. And then that just, you lose some of the cohesion of community. Yep. And these aren't maybe economic indicators, but they all do kind of point to how we kind of got to now.
Gosh. I'm speaking with Daniel Bergen. He is the producer of Jim Crow of the North. It airs on TPT Channel 2 on Monday on February 25th during Black History Month. What other projects is TPT working on for Black History Month?
Yeah, I'm really proud of Twin Cities PBS. I'm a Minnesotan born and raised, and I love our story and I love our local history, and there's a lot to be proud of. And I love that during Black History Month, we've had hours of content, both from PBS nationally and then our local productions that tell the story. While Jim Crow kind of is an unfortunate but important history, We've been showing North Star, Minnesota's Black Pioneers, where we really kind of celebrate a lot of important African-American figures who helped kind of make Minnesota the state it is. And all these stories can be found on our webpage, too. So if you miss a broadcast, if you miss Jim Crow of the North, then 2 Mondays from now, you can kind of find it on our website. And I hope people do, because it's really an important history.
Yeah. And one that we don't know about. Nobody knows that it existed here. It's not something we talk about unless you lived it, as my in-laws did. But we just don't talk about it anymore.
We don't. And I'm glad you said that, because I hope we do. I hope this film helps us kind of talk about it. And maybe even it provides safe space to kind of talk about these things. Because if we don't understand the past, it's really hard to kind of plan and work towards our future.
I mean, and is that the takeaway to... I hear even today people say, well, why don't Black folks move out of Black communities if they don't feel safe there, if they think the schools are better in a different location? It's public school. It's free. Why don't they move out? And I hope I'm not offending anybody with this question. I just think it's really important to hear the answer.
Yeah, and you're probably not the only one. You're asking it rhetorically, but people do. And one, you know, a generation ago, they simply couldn't. And that's the point of this film,
exactly,
is that literally and legally you could not move out of those neighborhoods. And again, as I mentioned, then the kind of accumulating kind of pylon of the lack of wealth development makes it a problem. And so you think about, you know, if you're a renter in those communities now, it's hard. And this systemic racism and some of these other obstacles are hard to break through. Now, Black folks have been able to move into different communities, as have Jewish communities and others. And a lot of that is a result of, you know, the intentional civil rights efforts here and nationally. But it hasn't worked for everybody. And that's why we have to kind of reach back and understand and make sure that we're providing those opportunities. And this film and this story at least helps us answer that it isn't about, you know, kind of personal, you know, kind of struggles alone. It really is that there are systemic issues that have kept communities unable to develop the kind of wealth that would allow them up and out of the poverty.
Daniel Bergen, producer of Jim Crow of the North, thank you so much for joining me in studio.
Thank you for sharing this. It's important.
And for the work that you do. There's not enough of it out there, and we're thrilled to be able to feature it here at CCO.
We really appreciate it.
You got it. Once again, Jim Crow of the North is on TPT, which is your channel 2, Monday, February 25th at 9 p.m. Set the TiVo. Make sure you watch it. Show it to your kids. Have the conversation. The whole shebang. It's 4:22. Jordana here. I'll be right back on CCO. Susan and I are having a discussion on the air, or off the air, excuse me, about racism. And I said what we're talking about, she has to talk about it on the air, but you'll have to wait till be on the headlines to hear that. Okay. Is it Chris Rock who had a commentary? Oh, no, Nick Cannon had a commentary about that. And I feel like we can never do enough to talk about Black History Month on the air. And we hope to continue to be doing more. But this was such a fascinating part of our history that a lot of people don't realize. And a lot of people don't realize about the Jewish people being redlined, about the Black people being redlined. I even had a conversation with my kids about Native Americans as they're learning what the white people did to Native Americans when we came to this country. And even they were astounded at the brutality and the awfulness of the true history of our country, of what white people did to Native Americans and how we took their land from them and forced them onto reservations and how we treated them when we got here. So I know people want to be proud of their history, and we all do, but shining the light on how we came to be gives us perspective. And that question that I asked him, yes, I asked it rhetorically, but I hear it all the time here from people on the text line, which is like the YouTube comments. I don't even look at it anymore. It's just too racist. I hear that. Well, why don't people just bootstrap it? Why don't you just, you know, when my grandfather came here, my great, 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 you know, if you have that many greats, you've already had the opportunity to build wealth. You know, if your grandparents were slaves, great-grandparents were slaves a couple of generations ago, there is no opportunity to build wealth. And even if they were freed and given the 40 acres and a mule like they were promised, which they never really got, we then had laws like Jim Crow of the North. And these are the reasons why it's not just about bootstrapping. There is systemic racism. And yes, even in our community, and there always was. And documentaries like this are so important because they really shine a light on, it's a mirror, really. I know it's a light to the past, but it's a mirror on what is happening in our community today. And I'm just so grateful that I got a chance to talk with Daniel and shine a light on that. I cannot wait to watch what is going on or what will be on Jim Crow of the North. I only got a little trailer. Sometimes they send me the whole thing and I get to watch it in advance. Not this time. I only got a little 30-second teaser, unfortunately. Coming up a little bit later in the show, just a few minutes, I'll tell you what we have ahead. We're going to talk about that Isanti businessman who is charged with the murder and the 1993 stabbing of the Minneapolis woman. You've been hearing about this in Laura's news. They got him through DNA. So, boy, if you have sent your sample into 23andMe or genealogy or ancestry.com and have murdered somebody in the past, they're coming for you. Good luck. They're coming for you. I know you probably just wanted to know how Italian you were or how much, if there's any Asian in your background, but boy, you are going to prison if you happen to have murdered somebody in the past. I hope you did not. This is, I mean, it's great that it was found. It's wonderful that we have now solved an unsolved murder, and eventually her family, and she, may she rest in peace, will see justice. But I bet that was not the intention of people sending their cheek swabs into the DNA. Susan, have you done it?
No.
You have, and Paul did it. So when he comes back, I'm going to make sure that he hasn't murdered anybody or committed any heinous crimes. Moni hasn't killed anybody, right? She hasn't. Okay, thank God. So she's safe. But I don't really mean to make light of that. But the question becomes, is it legal for cops to go to these companies and just to take your DNA and have them matched? Susan made some calls to Joe Tamburino before the show, and he gave her that answer, which might surprise, shock you, and frighten you. So we're going to talk about that in the 5 o'clock hour. And then the worst dates ever. It is Valentine's Day. And yes, I bought Abdullah candies and chocolates. I think that's wonderful. But you know what's really the best day of the calendar? It's the day after Valentine's Day and the day after Easter. Because all the candy's on sale then, baby. All the candy. Give the good stuff. Buy the Abdullahs. Don't cheap out. Get the expensive stuff for your lover or your teacher, your coach, or whoever you're giving the Valentine's to. But the next day at the Walgreens, 50% off, baby. That's my favorite. That's for me. That's what I stock up on the desk. That is the best day of the year. And the kids know they're getting extra Hershey Kisses. And I don't care if they're branded Valentine's Day till next Valentine's Day. That's what's going to be in the house. It is 4:29. When we get back, Susan and I are going way beyond the headlines. And there's some funny stuff going on next on CCO. Amazon no longer going to be in New York City. Should Minnesota go for the Amazon headquarters? That's a question we're going to ask you in Beyond the Headlines. And also, Lufthansa is suing a passenger for missing a flight. Boy, the tables have turned. You have all heard my travel woes. Now the tables have turned on this Lufthansa passenger. And hilarious story that Shaletta sent me about Peppa Pig. Hear that after Laura's news. Susan, did you get to see any of the Grammys?
No, I didn't
get to see it.
I read a lot about them, and I'm glad I didn't.
Well, it was, yeah, there were some challenges. Michelle Obama came out on stage at the very beginning, which was amazing. It was great to see her, and she gave a speech, and she got a standing ovation. And then she posted recently, she got a text from her mama scolding her for not telling her that she was going to be on the Grammys.
Sure.
With the hashtag text from mom, she posted a partial conversation with her mama after she was on the Grammys. She says, her mom says, "I guess you were a hit at the Grammys," smiley face. She says, Michelle responds, "I'm sitting here with Valerie. This test is so typically you. Did you watch it?" Mom responds, "I saw it because Gracie called me. Did you meet any of the real stars or did you run right after you were done?" Michelle responds, "I told you I was going to be on it." Mom responded, "No, you did not. I would have remembered, even though I don't remember much." Michelle responds back, "And by the way, Mom, I am a real star." To which her mother responded, "Yeah." Isn't that funny? Did you meet any real stars? That is just Mama giving you the smackdown like she does every time.
Just real mom and daughter relationship.
That's absolutely right. So she posted it. Of course, it's adorable. Hashtag text from mom. Hashtag Grammys night. So she says her mother is very proud of her, but it was such a fun, regular kind of person with Michelle Obama as an official celebrity and hearing that her mom still just thinks she's regular Michelle Obama and the other real stars were out there. It was just really cute.
That is cute.
Ooh, that's loud.
Okay, I'll turn that
down. Okay, yeah, that was a little loud.
All right, so a local story here. On Saturday night on the St. Croix River near Bayport, a couple of fishermen were cramped inside a little tiny ice house. And they had been fishing for quite some time. But as they were had their little pole and their fishing line down in, there was about 2 feet of fishing line down the hole. Their jaw dropped when they felt a pull, and they see this colorful fish come up by the hole. And they realize that they have this huge fish, but they don't know how to get it up. So they've drilled two holes with the auger, and it's not big enough to get this big sturgeon up. So they are sitting there. They are holding on to this fish with the fishing pole. And they're also, the other guy's videotaping this whole thing, which, by the way, if you go on WCCO Facebook, you will see the video of this whole ordeal of catching this ginormous sturgeon.
Oh, my gosh.
So they're sitting there drilling extra holes
to get him out.
Let the fishing line go a little bit. Let the sturgeon have some room while they're drilling more holes adjacent to the two holes.
How big was it, Sue?
It was 120 pounds, 78 inches long.
That is cool.
It was record making, and it's enormous.
Coming Can they
out of
keep
it? Little, no, they did not keep it. They threw it away, and they said this sturgeon was about 60 to 70 years old.
Unbelievable.
But the video is amazing. If you have even fishermen in you at heart, you want to watch this video, so go to WCCO Radio Facebook page and check it out.
I'm going to be watching it. I'm glad that was a good secret. I'm going to be watching it. Thank you, Susan.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon is dumping its New York City headquarters and its proposed 25,000 jobs. They're reversing course after politicians and activists objected to the nearly $3 billion in tax breaks it promised to what is already one of the world's richest and powerful companies. Amazon says, hey, we're disappointed to have reached this conclusion, that it already has 5,000 employees in New York City and plans to increase that number. But boy, that is a serious blow to the governor and the mayor, who intensely lobbied to have the project, competing against more than 200 other metropolitan areas across the continent, and were practically tripping over each other to offer them incentives. So I don't know, is Minnesota going to be in the running for that? I don't know if we want it, but hey, it looks like there's going to be another headquarters up for grabs. So sorry,
well,
New York.
We were up for grabs. I thought we were in the running for a while, but
maybe
they
we will be
no.
again now that they're not
nice.
You never know.
In New York.
Could happen.
Well, today's Valentine's Day, and you know, most of us have a little love, or you know, you love your children and stuff. But did you know that animals can really love?
Oh.
According to some new research, they say that lots of animals are social beings, and when they nuzzle with each other and snuggle with each other, or even if they work in harmony, like ants working together for a greater cause of building an anthill, it's like they truly like each other. And some even think that they're demonstrating love.
Hmm.
Patrick Abbott is an associate professor of biological sciences at Vanderbilt University, and he's studying this. He's focused on seeing why animals work together and what benefits that gives the animals when they do that. He said it's an interesting problem and why some organisms cooperate so well on big tasks and why doesn't everybody do it. It turns out when animals team up, they're likely motivated by survival.
I love that. Yeah, perfect Valentine's story, Susan. Travel woes. Lufthansa is suing a passenger who skipped the last leg of a booked flight. Now, I've never done this, but it's called skip lagging. I don't know.
So you have a layover,
right,
and you only do the first end of it.
Exactly, okay. Right. Because apparently sometimes you get cheaper flights to another destination and it has a layover, so the flight's cheaper. So you just stop there. Okay, so the unnamed passenger, Lufthansa says it violated their terms and conditions, and they're suing the passenger for $2,400. Now, apparently, flyers do this all the time. He was going from Oslo. He was flying to Oslo from Seattle via Frankfurt in April of 2016. They skipped the connecting flight and returned from Frankfurt to Berlin on another ticket. His total cost was $743. It would have been $3,133 had he booked the ticket right to his end destination.
Wow.
So you can see why they did that. Mm-hmm. You can see why they, you know. A victory for Lufthansa could also affect skip-lagging travelers that use the workaround and save hundreds of dollars per flight. guess this is a common practice.
I have never heard of skip legging.
Me neither. But so far, the courts have been on the airline side of this. There was a lower court case in Germany that ruled on the passengers' favor, but remains to be seen what will happen. It's really actually a good hack. If you're going somewhere else, look for a different destination that usually has a layover. I never thought to do it. Uh-huh. But boy, you don't want to be on the hook if they decide to
get caught.
You.
Right. Well, Nick Cannon has had enough. The comedian took to Instagram to wish everyone a happy Blackface History Month.
Oh, boy.
And he called out two late night personalities, mm-hmm. Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Kimmel, and Sarah Silverman, along with Gucci and Prada, for using blackface. Cannon uploaded a collage of the comedians photographed wearing blackface and then posted videos of both Kimmel and Fallon performing in blackface.
Oh, boy.
Kimmel had done it in a reoccurring skit, which ran from 1999 to 2004. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy Fallon had done it on SNL back in 2000. He was making a parody of Chris Rock. But Cannon asked of Fallon and Kimmel, are these your late night kings? And he made sure to tag the Instagram handle on his posts. He said, you know, I'm always on the side of the comedian and never pander to the sensitive. But I feel there needs to be some truth and reconciliation, discussions, and teachable moments amongst our communities. Now, Nick Cannon at one time had dressed up as a white guy. Mm-hmm. In fact, on the Nick Cannon Show, which I used to watch with my kids on Nickelodeon when he was little, he did have a white character. And
that was actually white or dressed in white face?
He dressed in white face.
Okay.
So he posted that on his Instagram account for his White People Party Music album, I guess. And he wrote this. America, there is no such thing as white face, just as there's no such thing as reverse racism, wrote Cannon. Blackface and racism are rooted in and are byproducts of the institutionalized oppression of a subjugated people. Mm-hmm. And that's so true. Mm-hmm. We as white people can never fathom the pain, the anguish, the fear that black people have in this country. Can't even equate to it.
That's a good message. I'm glad you read it.
Great message.
Thank you, Susan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Interesting stuff. Peppa Pig, sorry to lighten
Peppa
it up.
Pig.
Like this. Your kids didn't watch Peppa Pig.
No.
Peppa Pig is kind of new. Peppa Pig is an adorable little pig and her pig family, and they're British. Okay, and she is a cartoon, and it's, I guess, the hot new cartoon show. Mine was, you know, Paw Patrol or the Power Rangers or whatever. I don't even remember. Teletubbies, whatever they watched.
Uh-huh.
The Little Einsteins, that was their big one when they were little. So after a 21-hour flight across the Pacific binge-watching, UK children's show Peppa Pig, an Australian child got off the plane calling his parent Mummy. And
Mummy.
And finishing his sentences with Peppa's trademark snort. 2 years later, by the way, the little girl still oinks in conversation, and the mom is calling it the Peppa effect. When she posted about this on social media, she says she found out she was not alone. Many American families have reported the exact same thing after their kids watch a lot of Peppa Pig.
That's
they
hilarious.
Use British accents. They call their mum or mummy instead of mom, or like we do in the U.S. And they say it is definitely a Peppa effect because I guess they're so little and their brains are so malleable.
Sure.
They're just picking it up. Question, of course, is how much Peppa Pig is your kid watching? So might want to check that box. But the Peppa effect is real, and it's happening, I guess, all over the country. I guess the Australians change it to the British, and the U.S. changes to British as well. Really cute, though. How cute would
and
it be?
And they snort. I wonder if they're going, yeah,
I
like
guess,
a pig. Oh,
isn't that hilarious? So
that's
look
cute.
Look out for the Peppa effect, or if you're it's happening in your house, post it on our Facebook. We would love to see the Peppa effect.
Thanks, Mummy.
Isn't that cute?
Well, if you're planning to watch the Oscars from the confines of your couch on February 24th, here is a warning because it's going to be a little different this year. Thanks to a contentious decision by the Academy, civilian viewers are going to get a truncated version of the ceremony, and that is a move that is leaving some in Hollywood very mad. Now, the seeds of change were first announced in 2018, and I remember reading about this, and it was all...
they want to make it shorter, right?
Right. They
it's
want to
so
whittle
darn
it down
long.
From 4 hours to
sure.
3 hours, and this was from network pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with less than 2 weeks away from the broadcast, they have not given us the categories yet that are going to be chopped. And these categories will be given during the commercial breaks. But what they're going to do is they're going to videotape that, edit it down, and later in the broadcast, you're going to see edited versions.
So what was it? Cinematography, film editing?
Well, here's the thing. There's 6 to 8 categories of the 24 categories that are going to be deleted from the broadcast. Mm-hmm. But every year, they're going to rotate the categories.
Okay.
So there won't be the same categories left out from the TV.
Boy, aren't you just the stepchild, though? If
yes.
You got cut, you're in the commercial break, and they're rotating you in. But these were big categories, you know, cinematography,
yes.
film editing. These
yes.
are big. The films wouldn't exist without
out
them.
These categories, right.
Yeah. So, I mean, everyone has a part to play on a movie role, but maybe, I don't know, lighting. Makeup, I think, was one of them that got cut.
Costuming.
That's a big one.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't know why it lasts so darn long. The Grammys were 3 hours, and I TiVo'd it so I could buzz through it. They do get long. Sorry, cinematography.
Well, they tried to cut the speeches, but that doesn't work. You know, with the music, it still doesn't work.
And those are the moments you kind of want to see. You want to see them gushing or being all surprised. You know, we wanted to see Cardi B, you know, just completely flabbergasted.
Oh, I saw that.
It's adorable. Yeah. Anyway, all right, we're way too late, and Mike Max is going to be up next with a check-in on sports on CCO. Boy, that was an exciting game last night. Handsome husband and I checking out the end of the Minnesota Timberwolves game. Mike Max is over at TV to check in with us. It's great to get a win, Mikey.
A win and a convincing win against a very good Houston
right.
team.
An
interesting
exciting.
Houston team. It was a fun game. Went out there and watched for quite some time. Sheila E. performed at halftime.
I didn't see that.
Name?
Say it again.
What's her last name? Just E?
Just E. She's just E.
Is it like E or what?
Yeah, like your MM. She's just E.
Okay. Well, you know, Houston has a player named Nene, right?
Okay.
That's his name.
Nene. It just is. You're not
Nene.
Judging, are you? You're not judging Sheila E's last name.
No. I thought, is it Sheila E something? Or
no.
Just,
it's just she's just Sheila E. Was she fantastic?
Yeah, very good. Yeah, everything was very good.
I saw her Super Bowl last year. She performed at one of these parties.
Yeah.
Oh, she's on the drums. I mean, she was amazing. She just brings down the house.
Yeah, they had 15 plus last night. Not bad for a Wednesday night. If this team ever got it going, they'd be sold out for a matchup like that. But James Harden's the feature piece for Houston. Mm-hmm. He's gotten all the headlines in the NBA this year, and he scored 42. And it's hard to say this, but it was kind of a ineffective 42. It took a lot of shots to get there. And that means that he wasted a lot of energy and a lot of possessions to get there. Josh Okogie played well defensively as a rookie, giving him some energy, et cetera, and shot the ball a little bit. And then Jeff Teague, who's to me is an X factor on this team because you really don't know when he's going to play or not. He's injured. He's not injured. He's one of those guys. But last night he extended himself and looked really good. And I think he'll be back next year because he's got a $19 million option that he can exercise to come back and play. What would that be like, huh?
I have no idea.
19 minutes. Your checks every week would be, I don't know. It doesn't matter,
right?
I have
no idea. Yeah. It would be nice to find out. It would
be nice to find out, wouldn't it? Yeah.
You're going to grow a beard like James Harden?
Would I?
Yeah.
No, I couldn't, man.
I don't think you could.
I've never tried a beard. I don't know.
Really?
You like beards or not?
Well, I like that metrosexual thing everybody's got going on now.
You mean
the
3-day?
The scruff.
Yeah,
yeah, like the scruff. Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, but more so than the full beard.
No, full beard. Nothing, anything, any foods getting stuck in, that's a no-go for me.
Yeah, I mean, there could be a bird in there, you know?
I'm not interested.
Yeah.
And by the way, at the end of the game, it looked like he had that shin injury or that knee injury.
Yeah.
Is he okay?
Yeah,
or?
He was fine. Yep, that was not a factor, and they got the All-Star weekend coming up. Well, Kogi will play for the Rising Stars, Karl-Anthony Towns. Mm-hmm. For the Timberwolves, he will represent the Timberwolves in the game on Sunday. Now, if you want to dream a little bit, Minnesota Twins reported to training camp today, spring training in Fort Myers, pitchers and catchers. Tomorrow, they will sign Jorge Polanco and Max Kepler to contract extensions.
Okay.
And they look at these as a couple foundation pieces. Polanco missed a lot of last season because he tested positive for a no-no. Kepler's kind of an athletic right fielder there. I didn't know how they'd sign off on him or what they'd see in him, what they thought. But apparently they've seen enough that they're going to give him a contract extension. So that'll set those two up. Today, Rocco Baldelli met the media for the first time kind of in uniform as Twins manager. And one of the things that he wants to do is change the pace of spring training, meaning shorter drills, you know, moving around more, get it going more. And to an extent, you know, if it works, everybody will say, well, that's, you know, they're winning because. But if it doesn't, you know, then they'll try something else.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a new way of doing the same stuff.
What else are you going to talk about tonight?
I was at the Wild today, and I was surprised at how confident Bruce Boudreau is that they're going to the playoffs because they've been playing, you know, they've not been winning. I should say they've been playing horribly. They just haven't been winning.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, we're going to the playoffs. And I thought, that is the psychology of a head coach, right? Right. He's doubling down to give his team confidence, because right now the fans don't have that much confidence in him, and they may be a little bit fragile. So he says, boys, we're going to the playoffs. And all this bad luck we've gotten, we'll get good luck coming forward. So he's just trying to create a belief. And it's interesting to see him so definitive about why they're going to the playoffs at a time when they're coming off, you know, they've been just, in terms of results, just terrible since the All-Star break. But mm-hmm. But I get what he's doing. He's saying, we're good enough, and now it's our turn to win some of these close games. So he wants to change that mindset and not let this become too much of a negative. And it's just interesting to see how a coach approaches something like that at a time when, you know, confidence is low. He says, forget that. We're going to the playoffs.
And that's true leadership.
That's yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was thinking the same thing. That's true leadership. You're trying to get that ship into what's the old saying that one football coach used to have about a quarterback? Damn the storm, get that ship to the port, you know?
Got to get there. Yeah. Got to get there, and you got to have your eyes on the prize.
Yeah.
I love it, Mike. Anything else you got going on you want to tell us about?
Gopher basketball team had a tough loss last night on a foul that was questionable at best at Nebraska. It led to two free throws, and the Gophers take a loss to a team that had lost seven straight. That's not good for them as they try to make the NCAA tournament. So that one could linger a little bit. That could hurt a little bit. They play Indiana on Saturday.
Mike, did you get your DNA tested?
I haven't yet, but my wife did the, what do you call it, 23?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. In the past, has she murdered anybody?
I don't think so, but I...
Well, see, here's the deal.
Has she thought about it a few times with me? Yeah.
That's you. You're still here, so they can't get her on that. But now, if you give your DNA, it might go to the police if
That's
they
right.
want it, and they get you in some crimes.
That's right.
Please go and warn her.
You yeah, we've, I know. She's showing me all these graphs and trends, and I go, okay, you know.
You're the best. Mike Max coming up tonight.
Good
here
to
on
talk
CCO.
To you, Jordana.
You too, my friend. So let's talk about that. That's the legally, the cops can get your DNA after the break here on CCO.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.